This is Jim Inkster coming today on Talk Louisiana. We will visit with the Secretary of Transportation and Development, Dr. Sean Wilson. Sean Wilson will update the quest to improve Louisiana's deplorable road and bridge conditions. Also, what's going on in the Baton Rouge area. As we know, traffic remains a huge issue and significant problem. And Colonel Rob Maness, Republican, and Democrat Tony Brown, talk show host from Alexandria, will square off on the legacy of Senator John McCain, who died Saturday at the age of 81, 4 days short of his 82nd birthday, gallantly fighting a brain tumor in the same way that he gallantly stayed 5 years, more than 5 years, at the Hanoi Hilton. We'll talk with them about the senator and the president and more. Now the news on 89.3 WRKN. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana on WRKF. And your number is 877-217-5757, wherever you are. If you're in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. And if you'd like to send an email, talk@talklouisiana.org. We start with Dr. Sean Wilson, the Secretary of the Department of Transportation and Development. He worked with the department for many years as chief of staff, and he is a man who knows the deplorable nature of our roads and bridges about as well as anybody, and of course he's been out there doing his best to improve matters. How's that quest going?
We are making it, Jim. All of our roads are not deplorable, but you are correct that some of them have been neglected because we've not properly invested over the last 30 years with our revenue source like many other states. But we're doing our best with what we have, and we're putting safety of our travelers first and building a very sustainable system as best we can.
Here in Baton Rouge, I would suspect that the populace would rank the traffic issues we have maybe first, second, or third as far as issues that need to be addressed. What's being done here?
So, you know, you are correct, Jim, that folks are concerned about congestion. Here in the Baton Rouge area, we hear about the bridge to the split on a regular basis wherever we travel, whether it's New Orleans or Lafayette, Baton Rouge, Shreveport, you name it, folks talk about this congestion point. And I'm happy to tell you that we have spent a tremendous amount of time trying to make a difference on the interstates that carry 80% of the people on about 20% of the roads. And we're making good progress all along I-10 from Lafayette all the way through Highland Road and beyond to LA 73. You see major expansion construction all happening with no new sustainable revenue. Most of it is one-time money being spent innovatively. But we've got a very exciting effort that the governor announced earlier this year using Garvey Bonds, which is going to put about $650 million and infrastructure. And the most important thing, Jim, is we're putting it on projects that folks have asked for the last 15 to 20 years that have stayed around in search of a solution. And so whether it's the Barksdale Interchange or the new interchange to the new airport in New Orleans at Loyola that's opening up in February, to widening from the bridge to the split here in Baton Rouge, and replacing a bridge and tunnel in Belchase. These are projects that are going to be here, that have been here, and I'm happy to tell you that we're making a difference.
Now, you're a graduate, proud graduate of the University of Louisiana Lafayette.
Go Cajuns, absolutely.
So you've crossed that bridge a time or two, and you know what it's like at certain hours of the day, and if there's an accident, my God. What's being done to address the bottleneck at the Washington Street Bridge, Washington Street location, the exit? What's happening there?
So you're right. It's been studied a number of years and a number of decades, and I've traveled since 1998 to Baton Rouge traveling across that bridge. And when you see the structure, you think about that Washington Avenue off-ramp to I-10 from the bridge where 110 merges, and it drops down to one lane effectively and an exit ramp. We're changing that. When we started, when I became secretary, we began a process to advance and design an off-ramp, a left-hand off-ramp that will get you to Terrace Street. And I'm happy to tell you, because of the work that we've been able to do securing federal competitive funds, a very limited competitive pot, we broke ground about a month or so ago on that Washington Avenue off-ramp that is now the Terrace Washington Street off-ramp that will prevent that merge from 110, the death merge, I call it, all the way to Washington Street on that off-ramp. And so that's the first step. The second step
How long will it take?
It'll take about a year. So next year this time, we should be closing out that project, and folks will be taking an exit to get to Terrace Street and no longer have to merge if you're coming on 110. And that's going to reduce – it's not going to solve the problem, but it will reduce the congestion that occurs. The congestion you see at Washington Street really is a result of the overpass leading to the bridge that's three lanes with no shoulders. And so it's very close to that merge, and there's no way to take four lanes into three lanes very easily. And so we are starting a major project, and tomorrow we're having our first of three public meetings. This is our final array of public meetings to look at the bridge to the split widening, and it's most important for folks to participate, and I know we'll share the details of that. But at the end of the day, folks need to understand that the congestion on I-10, you may not think it'll get worse, but it is slated to double in I-10 if we do nothing. It's going to double in that footprint. And so we need to widen that and build some capacity. And that's not going to solve all of the region's problems. We still believe that there's a need for a new bridge. We still need to – we believe there's some improvements on LA-1 and the North Bypass. So there's a lot of good things happening. There's a lot of good projects, but we have to prioritize them in terms of delivering. And so we're going to spend $650 million on these projects. About $350 is going to be dedicated to the bridge to the split. We own about 95% of the right-of-way today to widen a new lane in each direction from the bridge to the split. And there's about 97 parcels. The most it'll be is 110, depending on the alternative. And the majority of those are just 5 or 10-foot acquisitions that we're going to need. Some of it's going to be for servitude. There will be some impacts on some residents. We're going to give some residents an option. And there's going to be an impact on a small number of businesses. And so we're going to manage that. We're going to try and mitigate that. And these public meetings is an opportunity for folks to come and share with us what they think about what we're proposing. It's a solution that I think we have sought after for two or three times previously in the last 25 years. And I think we've never gotten this close. We've never had a funding source. And I'm excited to see where we are today.
Your number again is 877-217-5757. You can send an email as well to talk@talklouisiana.org. I have a few of those for Secretary Sean Wilson, Dr. Sean Wilson, who, of course, came in with the administration of Governor John Bel Edwards, who was an advocate of a gasoline tax. And, by the way, he was not alone. The sponsor was a Republican, Steve Carter, right here in Baton Rouge. But it's a heavy lift to get 70 votes in the House and 26 in the Senate, and you got to get both. And he couldn't get the 70 in the House. He said he was very close. How big of a disappointment was that?
You know, I was extremely disappointed because I spent the year prior to making a case for new revenue, and I will continue to do that as long as I'm Secretary. I'm also a believer that we have to be realistic with what we collect and what it's going to cost to fix the things that we all agree need to be fixed. One penny of gas tax only produces $30 million. And so if you ask for 5 cents, that's only going to be $150 million. That's going to be the equivalent
per year.
That's and for the entire state. So that would be the equivalent of 2.5, maybe 3 interchanges on the interstate. That's not going to give us a new bridge in Baton Rouge. It's not going to give us a new bridge in Lake Charles or I-49 South or brand new construction on 20. So the 17 cents really brought it up to its current value. We asked folks, could you live on what you earned in 1989 in today's economy? And you absolutely cannot. And that's what's happening with our gas tax. It's eroded about 50 cents, 50%. And I was most disappointed that we didn't get a vote on it. I'm not one who gets to push the button, and I respect those folks who sit inside the railway in the legislature. But at the end of the day, I'd rather them take a vote and it not pass than not take a vote at all. But we're going to hopefully see that again real soon. We believe that is going to continue to grow and be more costly the longer we wait.
Joe in Mid-City. Good morning, Joe. You're on Talk Louisiana with Secretary Sean Wilson. Hi, Joe.
Good morning, Jim. Thank you for this topic, and good morning to your guests.
Good morning.
I was calling about a project that probably won't have the priority that the interstates have, but Plank Road, the 1300 block of Plank Road, is the road that I have about a 50-year history with, and that road is in dire need, that section of road is in dire need of some attention.
All right. What? I bet you get this all the time.
We get it all the time, and it's a standard answer, not because I'm not familiar with the project. I am familiar with the project and the needs on Plank. I will tell you, we have a preservation-only budget, and as a result of the amount of money we spend on preservation and operating our system, our unmet needs are growing instead of shrinking. I can remember just a few years ago, our backlog was $12.4 billion. Mm-hmm. Today, it's $13.9 billion, and that's after spending an average of $800 to $900 million a year on our system. It's not that we don't know where the projects are or that we can't deliver them. It's that we don't have enough to do all of the projects that are there, and our system is aging out and deteriorating much faster than the resources allow.
877-217-5757. There is still time to talk with Secretary Sean Wilson. Gustavo in Goodwood. Hi, Gustavo.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for taking my call, as always. I'm not sure if the Secretary is the right person to ask this question, but it appears that there are a large number of projects that have started in different areas of the city of Baton Rouge, and some of the projects remain unfinished for a long time, and some other projects appear to be not urgent. For example, the Blue Bonnet Extension.
We've got about 30 seconds, so if you'd like to give a brief answer.
Very quickly, some of those projects are not DOTs, but I will tell you, every public agency has a method of dealing with projects that stop, and it's in state law that allows me to give them time and then claw back or receive refunds back on the project if they're not finished in time. So sometimes it takes longer to accelerate that.
And we'll return after this 90-second pause with more from Sean Wilson. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana on WRKF. Your number is 877-217-5757 for Sean Wilson. And by the way, tomorrow night there will be a meeting at McKinley High School at 5:30, and this is regarding I-10 and what's going on. So the secretary will be there, as will others. That's 5:30 tomorrow night at McKinley High School. And then Thursday at the Marriott on Hilton Avenue at the same time, 5:30. And if you're in the Addis area, Wednesday at the Civic Center at the same time, 5:30, Sean Wilson will be updating listeners and, of course, constituents regarding what is happening with I-10.
We'll also be taking comment there, too.
Well, that's the whole idea, to get some interaction from people, and there's some people who are revved up about this. And Sean Wilson knows better than anybody, because for 20 years he's been commuting from Lafayette. He is a graduate of University of Louisiana Lafayette. He still lives in that great city, the hub city of Louisiana. And I would imagine there have been many times when you've been on the interstate, probably screaming or close to it because of the bottleneck. What do you think when it gets all congested like that?
You know, I think I should call someone in high authority at DOT, but then I realize I can't call myself. You know, I sit there and I see it all as I travel the state. I'm in a car that's got over 100,000 miles and is not 3 years old yet, because I drive around the state to experience what people do. And I just see the opportunity there. I just know we don't have the resources, and folks always question and challenge us on that. I look no further than what we proposed when we did our gas tax. We had 100-plus projects that would have been put into the program, ready to go this year, had we had the resources. And those projects have to sit on the shelf. And, you know, unfortunately, we had a really bad accident on I-12 where we lost four lives. And it was a stretch of I-12 that would have been under construction had we passed the resources with that gas tax increase. And we were not able to do that. And so that project has to wait. And now we're competing for $25 million with St. Tammany Parish for that.
And the wear and tear on vehicles. It costs people a lot of money because of the roads and hitting potholes.
You will pay for it sooner or later. You're going to pay for it in damage. You're going to pay for it in the value of your time, which is so very important. You know, you look at this Highland, the 73 project that we're doing in a crisis study. They talked about how it will reduce travel by 15 minutes in each direction with that widening once it's complete. The value of the time of 50 to 60,000 people in congestion on a regular basis is very expensive. So,
all right. Angela in Mid-City asked the right amount for a gasoline tax. I think Carter was proposing 17 cents, wasn't he?
That's correct. We proposed 17 cents, and that 17 cents is what it would have been had the 16 cents been indexed. So it's the right amount to stay with the cost of inflation. And the cost of construction has gone up by 25% since that time. And projects get older, bridges get older, pavement erodes. There's no perpetual pavement. And then the other thing I think that's important, Jim, is I made the commitment that 100% of those funds would go to construction. None of it was going to go to salaries, benefits, or related benefits. We would live within our means out of the 16 cents to pay for the staff that has been reduced in half over the last 25 years. And so we're down the 4,200 people to keep you safe, to move ice from the bridges and the roads and dewater them and cut grass and do all of the things we tend to take for granted that keeps you safe. Somebody's got to change those signal heads. That's what we do. And so we were going to dedicate 100% of that new revenue just to construction because that is what the need is. It's not for salaries and benefits. It's for construction.
So you're saying the staff is dropped from, what, 6,000 or so to 4,200?
No, we were as high as 8,000 people, Jim. Since I've been at the department, we were at 5,600, and that's been 13, 14 years, and they're down to 4,200 people. Our fleet of vehicles has been reduced. The number of roads has increased. The amount of work that we have to take care of has increased.
We have more people as well.
You've got more people. You've got roads that are in worse conditions than they were 10 years ago. When we buy new bridges or build new bridges, someone's got to take care of that.
Paul in Opelousas. Hello, Paul. You're on Talk Louisiana with Secretary Sean Wilson.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning. As always, a subject that needs to be talked about.
Hey, Paul.
I travel a lot to Houston and the Texas area, Mississippi, and North Louisiana. Beltway 8, if it would not have been constructed in Houston, Houston would be a bottleneck. I hate to say it would be like another Baton Rouge. The ideal of a toll road, have we ever even looked at it seriously? And I just want to put that out there.
We have looked at it seriously. This policy or this administration's policy is that toll roads should be considered, as are all revenue sources, and we're in fact using them. And believe it or not, we are in the middle of a procurement for a public-private partnership, which has been on the books for years. And in Belle Chasse, Louisiana, we are proposing a structure. It's about $125 million. We've got about $80 million in hand. 45 of it was a result of us competing and being one of 23 states to win this money. And then the balance of it is going to be maintenance money that we had to repair a tunnel. And then the locals are contributing a little bit through the MPO. And the balance, about $50 million, is going to be paid for with tolls if we're successful. And so we are trying to use that. The most important thing I will tell you is in order for a toll project to be successful or feasible, you have to have traffic, and you have to compare that cost to the time savings that folks are going to get. And is it valuable? Is it worth it? So, yes, we are going to try and engage in tolling if possible, where we can with the public support.
877-217-5757 in our remaining time with the Secretary of Transportation and Development, Sean Wilson. Danny downtown asks about Danny is asking about the bridge. How long would a new bridge take to be constructed?
So, Danny, we believe we need to have a new bridge. We are probably 6 to 8 years away from making a final decision on that, and it could vary in terms of...
Can we wait that long?
I don't think you can wait that long, but ideally, if we widen I-10 sooner than later, it'll be widened before we can deliver the bridge. That's the reality of infrastructure. We are looking at five different alternatives. The most important thing is we need to build that bridge and consider how will folks on I-10 get to that bridge and how they get back to I-10. I heard someone talk about one of the challenges we have in Louisiana isn't just our poor soil conditions. It's all of the pipelines and utilities that run under that soil. Those are things that we're looking at. So we need a new bridge. Construction, I believe, will take 4 to 5 years to build, depending on how they do that, and contractors can go extremely fast in different models. The answer is we can't get started unless we have a revenue package mixed with federal funds, which are always threatened, state funds, considering tolling, and any local revenue. President Trump has been a real big advocate of saying, how can you bring non-federal revenue sources to the table? And the state is subsequently looking at that same model, saying how can you bring non-state resources to the table? And both on Barksdale and Loyola, local governments, and here in Baton Rouge, for that matter, is giving us $36 million on the widening project.
All right, and a listener asked about the $650 million in bonds that you referenced. It's a creative way of financing this. How did this come about?
So we've had Garvey Bond authority since Safety Lou, and the state has very wisely said no more than 10% of our federal resources should ever be obligated in Garvey, which means $67 million a year can be used for Garvey bonds. We've taken it a step further and said, let's only do a short-term bond issuance of about 12 years, and let's dedicate that to projects that's going to last three times as long. So when we build the structures with this $650 million, those projects are going to last 75 years with decent maintenance. And so it's a much better model. The bonds will be paid off 12 years after each project starts for that project. So when I start constructing Barksdale next year, in 12 years after that, the bonds for that project will be paid off, and the state can then recycle that Garvey component to do other projects. The reality is you have to wait until you get those projects done and free up capacity. And so every state that uses them, about 25 states have used them. We're excited to be issuing this Garvey package, and we think we've selected the right projects to build with it, and it's going to help us sustain our preservation program.
How long has it been since there was a gasoline tax increase?
1990. We did the time
28
program.
Years.
1990.
How do we compare with other states?
You know, we compare to other states pretty well, I think. When you look at Texas, their gas tax is the same as Louisiana. But what Texas does differently is they have embraced tolls. They provide billions of other revenue dollars. Here in Louisiana, all those sources have been tapped and are used in the general fund. So we compare in terms of our price. We don't compare very well when you look at the condition of our soils and the aging infrastructure.
We'll spend a few more minutes with Secretary Sean Wilson. 877-217-5757. We're back after this pause for the news with Karen Henderson on WRKF.
John Bel Edwards says the United States has lost a great statesman and an American hero. He's talking about Arizona Senator John McCain, who passed away at the age of 81 from brain cancer. Political consultant Roy Fletcher of Baton Rouge was McCain's deputy national campaign manager when he ran for president in 2000. Fletcher calls McCain a brilliant politician.
He tackled issues that others couldn't, and he could go across the aisle and he could get enough votes to do what he needed to do.
Flags at the White House have returned to full staff after they were lowered to half staff to mark the death of Senator McCain. Louisiana Tech student Mason Andrews' attempt to become the youngest pilot to fly around the world has been delayed because of monsoon conditions in India. A Facebook post by his father says Andrews has been in India for a week and will continue his journey to Thailand once the weather clears. He left Monroe on August 1st. Louisiana Radio Network.
The biggest game of the season is here. It's Saints, the new $5 instant ticket from the Louisiana Lottery.
Ball 51!
Play now for your chance to win up to $100,000.
Third and goal from the 4-yard line. He rolls to the right, throws in the back of the end zone. Touchdown, Saints!
Enter the second chance drawings for your chance to win prizes like VIP suite experiences.
That's what I'm talking about!
A deluxe limo experience, a tunnel team experience, official autographed team merchandise.
Get up! Let's go!
And the grand prize, a 2019 Saints season ticket package.
Ball's down. Kick is up. It's good! Saints take the lead!
Play Saints from the lottery for your chance to score big and make this your winning season. Must be at least 21 to purchase.
2 years after his home burned down under suspicious circumstances, a Walker man has been charged with arson with intent to defraud. State Fire Marshal spokesperson Ashley Rodriguez says Jerry Evans Sr. and his alleged co-conspirators burned down his massive home to collect on the substantial insurance policy.
He had a 6,700-square-foot home, and he had bragged to many people about the large insurance policy he had on it.
Three others have been arrested as well. An LSU engineering professor has a bold new invention to keep Louisiana's notoriously finicky roads from falling apart. apart after just a few years.
Cracked roads and potholes have terrorized the Bayou State for over 100 years, causing untold amounts of damage. And until now, the only option for replacement has been a total repaving. But Dr. Go-Chung Lee says he's developed a sealant that protects the roads by expanding during winter and shrinking during the summer.
So in such a way, we can always keep the contact between the sealant and the pavement so that the water from the top will not penetrate into the pavement.
Lee says the next step is making it commercially viable. I'm Matt Doyle.
Louisiana Radio Network.
Oh. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. 877-217-5757 is your number. Matt Doyle is producing. This is Talk Louisiana. And in a moment, we're going to hear from Colonel Rob Maness and radio station mogul Tony Brown in Alexandria, and they'll square off on what's going on nationally. And, of course, we mourn the passing of Senator John McCain. He died Saturday at the age of 81, 4 days short of his 82nd birthday, and a great American. 877-217-5757. Sean Wilson, another listener, wants to know if there's any possibility of a loop in Baton Rouge. This is an age-old topic of discussion. Any possibility that this will be a reality?
I think elements of it will be a reality sooner than later. The challenge is that we've built a tremendous amount of free capacity on the interstate, and the loop is very costly. That's over $1 billion just for the loop. These things cost money, and it takes time to build.
And Roger in Lafayette says, what is the status of the I-49 connector project in Lafayette?
I-49 connector is proceeding very well. I think we've got a much better alternative in place now that we've gone through about 18 months of public input, the most we've had on just about any project that we can ever imagine. At the end of the day, these are the types of projects that would need dedicated funding over multiple years to deliver. And I worked on that project as an undergraduate and look forward to hopefully breaking ground on something before our tenure's over.
Sean Wilson, undergraduate and master's, I believe, from UL.
Master's and PhD from Southern, and undergraduate in planning from UL.
The Mandela School of Public Policy,
yes, is that's correct.
The place where Sean Wilson received his PhD. And tomorrow you can meet this fine gentleman if you so desire. He will be at McKinley High School, 5:30 p.m., and we'll be talking, or he'll be talking about I-10 and much more. And that, of course, is an area that involves a lot of congestion, people getting off that interstate right there on Highland Road.
Absolutely.
And Thursday at the Marriott in Baton Rouge on Hilton Avenue, and finally Wednesday in Addis at the Civic Center, you can talk with Sean Wilson. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jim.
Appreciate it. 877-217-5757 is your number. And the big news over the weekend was the death of Senator John McCain. Today in the New York Times, a story from Julie Hirschfeld Davis reads, as leaders of both political parties and foreign dignitaries publicly mourned John McCain on Sunday, President Trump conspicuously avoided a national moment of tribute to a senator whose death seemed to be its own metaphor for the demise of civility and unity in the Trump era. The president did not make even the most cursory public show of respect on Sunday for Mr. McCain, against whom he had continued to indulge a personal grievance, even as it was apparent that the Arizona Republican was losing his battle with brain cancer. The president spent much of the day golfing and attacking his usual enemies on Twitter. It was the start of what promises to be a difficult week for President Trump. John McCain quietly declared before his death that he did not want President Trump to take part in his funeral, a decision that will render the president a virtual pariah, as the senator is eulogized by former presidents and other luminaries as a principled war hero and dedicated public servant. Rob Maness, which line is he on? Colonel Rob Maness, who spent 30 years serving our country in the United States Air Force, ran for the U.S. Senate twice and ran a good race, receiving about 15% of the votes in 2014 against Bill Cassidy and Mary Landrieu. What is your take about the passing of Senator McCain and the snub by the President of the United States, Rob Maness?
Well, we all, as Americans, should mourn the passing of a heroic citizen like John McCain, Jim. That's the way I feel about it. There's a great eulogy in the Atlantic I believe it came out this morning, and I'll just read a little bit of it that really caught my eyes. Senator McCain reveled in mischief. He let loose his temper. He surrounded himself with some wild characters, and even worse, but he wore his mistakes, and he bore the weight of his failures with nobility. I think that really sums up the John McCain that we've come to know and think about as a person that contributed with strength to the United States of America and its history. I know he didn't feel that he had made much of a place because he said he felt good that he made a small place, but I think he left he made a large place, and he'll leave a big hole, even though I disagree with him very aggressively politically on many things. But it doesn't matter at this point. It's time. His fight is over now. He's fought a good fight for us and for his Lord, and it's time for the nation to mourn, learn the lessons from his life, and move on.
Right, 877-217-5757, and we will hear from Tony Brown in just a moment. But John McCain is a man, of course, who ran for president 10 years ago and lost to President Obama, but he bowed out gracefully, and he will be lying in state in both Arizona and in Washington, D.C. He spent more than 5 years in a prison camp in Hanoi at the so-called Hanoi Hilton, and during that time he was tortured, and he was at one point offered early release when his captors learned that he was the son of an admiral and the grandson of another admiral, but he refused. He stayed with his men, and he served more than 5 years. And because of that, he is justifiably saluted as a war hero. But President Trump, then candidate Donald Trump, had a different viewpoint. So he called him a loser, and he said he was not a hero because he was, quote, captured. Tony Brown, radio station mogul, owner, and talk show host in Alexandria, what is your take on the legacy of Senator McCain and the snub by the president?
First of all, let me say good morning to Colonel Rob Manis. My wife is still in the United States Air Force. She'll be retiring in November with 35 years in the Air Force come November, and she's stationed out of Barksdale. So thank you for your service, sir. Senator John McCain, courageous, honorable, decent, good character, readiness to reexamine his own mistakes, the anti-Trump, everything that Donald Trump isn't, John McCain was. And I'm a Democrat, and you know I'm very conservative when it comes to fiscal issues, but John McCain is a hero in every sense of the word. And I think that Trump taking the low road of not even giving a proper tribute to him, and the thing that I saw with Trump's full body picture on it, to me was insulting. So when you honor a man, even in a small way, as Trump did, you know, he didn't even do that correct. And then we know that the White House came out with a statement. They had one prepared even before Friday, and Trump refused to read it. So you had an opportunity to honor this man. You disrespected him in his life, as we just heard, and now you're even disrespecting him.
Keep going, Tony.
He's gone on to glory, and I think we need to give Senator John McCain all the due that he should do. He is a hard-fighting, he was a hard-fighting American. He was definitely a hero, and we know that Donald Trump dodged the draft on several times. So John McCain and Donald Trump's name should not even be used in the same sentence, as far as I'm concerned. Because
all right. Well, I want to get Colonel Rob Manis in before we go to a break, Tony. And Colonel Manis, Tony brought up the elephant in the room. The president got 6 draft deferments. A caller corrected me the other day, and she was right. It was 6, not 5, and did not serve in the military. No member of his family, no brother, no son, no father, no grandfather, no member of the Trump family has ever served in the military. Is he really qualified to be the commander-in-chief?
Well, sure, he's qualified to be the commander-in-chief. Bill Clinton was, and he did similar things.
Well,
Barack Obama never served in the military.
Okay. Now, wait a minute, Barack Obama could not have served in Vietnam. He was not old enough. Hillary Clinton could not have served in Vietnam. Bill Clinton was a draft dodger, and you conservatives really pounced on him. Why aren't you doing the same to Donald Trump?
Oh. let me get to the comment about the people that get shot down and become prisoners or war heroes. Okay, Jim, I just want to make a comment about that. That was absolutely wrong of the presidential candidate to say that, because it disparages not only Mr. McCain, but all of those that come after him, like me and my kids, who might become prisoners of war. And we go through great lengths to teach our people to get through that very difficult situation with honor, like Mr. McCain was able to do, and all of his compatriots. So that was very wrong. And I don't know that I don't recall that I ever said anything about Clinton or anybody else being a draft dodger when Bill Clinton was in there. But I do recall seeing a lot of political comments about that. And you're right. Those that did say that should be holding Donald Trump accountable if that's what he did. But to compare him and his qualifications to be commander in chief to somebody that served in the military, I think is the wrong thing to do, because we've had many, many commanders in chief that haven't served in the military, and some that couldn't serve in the military. So that's unfortunate that we have to do that. But hey, it's politics, so I understand where it's at. Now, when Trump makes the wrong call, I'm going to call him out. Look, I'm the only person on this radio station call right now that's ever been taken personally to task by Donald Trump in May of 2014 in the public. So
877-217-5757 or 297-5633 in Baton Rouge. talk@talklouisiana.org is our email address. Matt Doyle is producing, and we'll return with Colonel Rob Maness and broadcast mogul Tony Brown joining us from Alexandria, Colonel Maness in Mandeville, and we're back after this pause on WRKM. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening to Talk Louisiana, and if you'd like to participate, if you get a busy signal, be patient. The number is 877-217-5757 for Tony Brown, broadcast mogul in Alexandria, and Colonel Rob Maness, who served our country with distinction in the U.S. Air Force for 3 decades. Colonel Maness made the statement that those who held Bill Clinton accountable for being, quote, a draft dodger should do the same for President Trump. Tony Brown, is this relevant today, or does it really matter whether a president served in the military?
All I know is that yesterday is history, tomorrow's a mystery, and all we have is today, the present. And presently speaking, when we go back and look at the past, the history, our founding forefathers designed impeachment for someone exactly like Donald Trump. Their writings in the debate surrounding the creation of the Constitution made it clear that the framers feared a certain kind of character coming to power and usurping the Republican idea of their new nation. The future president back then, James Madison, even worried about a leader who would pervert his administration into a scheme of peculation, he wrote. Theft of public funds or oppression. He might betray his trust or foreign powers. So they even framed it in the Constitution that the person didn't have to necessarily be indicted of a crime, but just a speculation of a crime. And if we know that the Constitution basically says, and James Madison said it back then, Jim, that if we have a president who committed a crime in the act of becoming president, while becoming president, that presidency should go directly to Congress and impeachment proceedings need to start.
Patrick on Bluebonnet. Patrick, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Well, I think I respect Patrick's views very much so. I'm a big admirer of Sarah Palin. She has supported me in all of my political endeavors, and I think she's right on a lot of policy issues and those kind of things. And I think Mr. McCain probably regretted the way his campaign treated her, because she infused a fire into that campaign that had not been seen before, and had he embraced at least somewhat Sarah Palin and her policy proposals and those kind of things, that he might have actually won that campaign. Anyway, that's all in the past. But right now, when you talk to people that have been up close and personal to John McCain on a regular basis and you hear from them, that's not what you hear. What you hear is a man that took people under his wing that were younger than him, regardless of their political ideology, regardless of what side they were on. A man who, like Donald Trump, has the courage to reach out to those that other people might not want to reach out to, just like Trump is trying to do with the North Korean gentleman, like he has has tried to do with Putin, although I disagree with the way he handled that Helsinki press conference. It was a disaster for him, and I was shocked that he did so poorly there. But you can't blame them for that. And to get back to Mr. McCain, that was what he did. McCain and Trump are very similar in that regard. The difference is their background that got them to where they are.
Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on with Colonel Maness and Tony Brown. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Yeah, Colonel, isn't it true that because of Sarah Palin's total ignorance about the issues, especially when she was interviewed by Katie Couric, that McCain's own campaign manager and assistant refused to vote for McCain because of the fear that Palin might become president?
Was Sarah Palin qualified to be a vice presidential nominee?
Well, she was already governor of Alaska and was doing quite well there. As a matter of fact, I think she was just as qualified as any other American citizen would be, like a Hillary Clinton or any of the other folks that have run for that office. And I think she was a good pick by Mr. McCain because he was seen as more of a moderate in the center, slightly right of center, maybe sometimes even left of center. And he needed that from a political perspective to try to sew up the rest of the GOP conservative base of the party. So, unfortunately, for those of y'all that have not done live interviews or even taped interviews with these reporters and those kind of things, preparation is the key. And when you see an interview like the disaster that Ms. Palin had with, I think it was Katie Couric you mentioned, which it was a disaster, that's poor preparation. And I put that squarely on the McCain campaign's efforts. It was their responsibility and their job to make sure that happened.
All right. A year and 3 months after Bill Clinton took office, Richard Nixon died, the 37th American president. And Nixon chose as his principal eulogist the 41st American president, a man from another party. William Jefferson Clinton, much to the chagrin of a lot of Republicans, but in Yorba Linda, California, at the Nixon Library, there Clinton gave the eulogy, and a very good one for former President Nixon. Now, this is in contrast to John McCain stating that he doesn't want President Trump to even attend his funeral. Tony Brown, what do you make of this?
Well, as I had said before, John McCain know something. In Washington, even death is political, a fact McCain well understood as he sought after eulogizing himself. And by planning his funeral rites to exclude the president, he would be making an unmistakable posthumous statement directed at the White House. And let me say this in reference to what he said, the gentleman that called in about McCain. McCain is a hero. And to say something like that in the man's death, to me, is shameful. McCain is a hero. I'm a Democrat, and I love the guy. I love that he was able to reach across the aisle. And I didn't see him as a contentious old man at the end. I saw him as a guy who was willing to reach across the aisle to despite the politics in Washington and was just basically trying to get something done. And I think a lot of Democrats are saying the very same thing. We wish we had more people who represented the GOP like John McCain.
Do you think, based on your previous remark, that impeachment is inevitable? It would seem it would not be inevitable unless Democrats regain control of the House. But what are your thoughts about the prospect of impeachment?
I saw Congressman Al Green mention something. I think he came out months ago, and he was just interviewed on CNN this weekend. I think what he's saying is right. I think that the Congress has a duty. When you have a guy who is an unindicted co-conspirator. We have his attorney who has pled guilty to 8 felonious counts. We have, Paul Manafort last week deepened the political and legal storm raging around the White House. And we have these people around the president who are falling.
All right. Colonel Maness, what about impeachment? Is that something the president will have to deal with?
If the Democrats take control of the House of Representatives, I think he'll definitely have to deal with it. In Tony's previous remarks about Madison and Adams and those folks, I think he was spot on what he was reading their quotes about and talking about their perspectives on it. However, there there's no evidence that Donald Trump has committed a crime on his way to the presidency, and the issues surrounding him are before he got into office that are being talked about. So it's going to be a very difficult hill to climb if they do try to impeach him, even if the Democrats do take control of the House.
David in Atlanta. David, I think we got David. David, good. You're going to have to activate David in Atlanta, Matt. There we go. David, you're on the air with Colonel Maness and with Tony Brown. Hi, David.
Good morning, everyone. Colonel Maness, a few months ago on your radio show in New Orleans, I said regarding your support of a likely pedophile, Roy Moore, and a man who has no respect for the law, twice removed from office, I said that you are an extremist. In response, you shouted obscenity.
All right. I think we remember that. Colonel Maness. You're going to have to pull him up as well, Matt. Colonel Maness, your thoughts?
I'd love to respond to that. That individual goes by the call name of Flaming Liberal, and I used a term when I cut him off on my radio show that I'm not going to repeat here, but it was not an obscenity. The person that yelled obscenities, if you go back and review the tapes on the WWL article or report that was done, or the transcripts, you'll see that the only obscenity that was yelled and screamed was from that individual.
All right. Is that how you saw it, David, in Atlanta?
I'm sorry. I couldn't hear the colonel's response, although he disgraces the title colonel.
All right. Let's go to Tony Brown as we wrap up this hour. Tony, passions are high. Activate Tony's line. Where do you see all this going?
What was the question?
David and the colonel have a history, and I think we've lost the colonel probably because he didn't want to talk with David. But at any rate, what's your take regarding the lack of civility that we have in public life now? And is President Trump, is he somewhat responsible for this?
Absolutely. You know, we used to pride ourselves, even in American history, in learning about our president's past. Hello, are we there?
Yeah, we're on.
Okay, we knew that even though he didn't, we were taught that George Washington didn't tell a lie when he said he chopped down the cherry tree. Now we're getting a president that tells, what, a minimum 50, 20 lies a day?
All right, we do have to roll, but thank you, Tony Brown. Thanks to Colonel Maness as well. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Until then, for Matt Doyle, I'm Jim Inkster. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.